10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Any mall that charges you to see Santa Claus must immediately stop blaming Amazon for their problems. And now, Dr. Dave Weather. You know, we have never seen the person who murdered the CEO of United Healthcare. We never saw that murderer. We have seen pictures of a guy at Starbucks, a guy at a counter in a hostel, a youth hostel, H-O-S-T-E-L, outside of Manhattan. They're called, you know, dorms. But we've never seen a picture of this person. And this was a planned hit on the CEO of United Healthcare. Surely the person who did the hit could have paid a guy to put on this jacket, carry that backpack, check into the hostel, go to the Starbucks. Pretty good decoy. There's Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective and official police spokesperson for Sterling Every Damn Night. First of all, I'm very jealous of you being in Florida. How hot is it right now, Vic?
It's in the 50s, Walter. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, this is the one week a year that you go to Vaughn's to get firewood. You go to Vaughn's to get to go to Piggly Wiggly to get firewood this week. Yes. I lived in Fort Lauderdale for a year. I remember the week that it was 50. Vic Ferrari, New York City police detective, wired to the community. I'd really be interested in hearing your theories on what happened to the CEO of United Healthcare.
Well, as the details are unfolding, it looks like to me the killer had inside information that someone set him up. He knew he got off the train within 45 minutes of Brian Thompson walking around on that Midtown street. He knew he had enough time to stop at the Starbucks and get a couple of power bars, a water. He was seen, as he got off the train, using a cell phone. And the thing is, Brian Thompson wasn't scheduled to speak until 9 a.m. He was out in the street about 6:40 a.m., and he wasn't staying in the hotel where the conference was. So it seems to me there's somebody in the inside that passed information to this gunman.
Now, that's interesting. Brian Thompson was not staying at the Hilton Hotel. He was staying at a different hotel.
Correct.
Oh, he's probably staying at the Peninsula half a block away on 54th Street, much more expensive and more appropriate for his CEO. I have many questions. First question is it possible that the photos we're seeing are distractions, that the guy who really did kill Brian Thompson is not the guy at the Starbucks. He's not the guy at the hostel. He paid a guy to wear this jacket, go to Starbucks, go to the hostel. Meanwhile, he disappeared long ago. Is that a possibility?
It's possible, but not probable. I think that the person who's popping up all over the place, like Waldo, is the gunman.
In that case, how is it possible for the great New York City Police Department, and I say that straight, no irony, I have no more respect for any organization than the New York City Police Department, if they have these pictures and they have these receipts and this, I believe they know exactly who it is. And for whatever reason, they're not saying exactly who it is. How could they not know exactly who it is?
You're right. To this point, it is quite possible that the people closest to this investigation have a suspect name, but for whatever reason are not releasing it to the public because they might have uncovered co-conspirators in this homicide.
And now he did know where he was staying, Brian Thompson. He knew when Brian Thompson was coming out. What's interesting is that this guy was on a cell phone moments before he committed this murder. Is it possible that he had Brian Thompson's cell, called him up, pretended to be a friend, pretended to be a contact from United Healthcare, said, hey, why don't you meet me for coffee at Starbucks now? Could that have happened?
Possible, but not probable. The CEO is only going to take a call at that hour in the morning from someone near and dear to him. You know, most people aren't going to talk to anybody before they get that first cup of coffee.
The other thing that I can't get over, and it almost leads itself to many, many jokes, which is, hello, the New York City Police Department is offering the reward. Where the hell is the reward from United Healthcare?
That's a really good point. I know the FBI, who's involved in this now, because you got to remember, Brian Thompson and his company is under a DOJ investigation for insider trading. They're involved in this now, and they've upped the reward to $50,000.
The FBI did. But not United Healthcare. United Healthcare seems to have no interest in finding out who this killer was, unless, oh gosh, they already know.
That I don't know, but I do know that the reward began at $10,000 with the New York City Police Department, and then the feds got involved. You also got to remember, in addition to the NYPD and the FBI, the ATF is probably involved in this because of the silencer angle on the homicide.
This is Vic Ferrari, retired New York City police detective and a daily contributor to Sterling Every Damn Night, and he has been for almost 10 years. Do you realize that, Vic? It's almost been 10 years. And the reason Vic is a regular contributor is he's an accomplished author. He has the best cop stories I have ever heard. One of my many fantasies that doesn't involve women is going to a cop bar and eavesdropping on police detectives telling stories. And that's what we get with Vic Ferrari when he tells his retired police detective stories. What do the New York City Police Department, what do they do next?
Well, they know he fled the city, and they're fairly certain he fled on a Greyhound bus out of the Port Authority terminal. They have his photo. It's going to take a while, so they've probably run his prints, if they have prints. If he's never been arrested and his DNA isn't in the database, there's not going to be a match for anything. So what they're probably doing with his DNA is going through like one of these companies where you can find out your ancestry or your genealogy, trying to see if he has relatives that have contributed to the database. But that takes time. I think what they're going with right now to actually put cuffs on this is putting his photo on blast. Now they've got that reward out there prompting someone to make a phone call and say, yeah, I know, I went to high school with this guy, or this guy used to date my sister.
And there have been some pressers with the New York City Police Department commissioner, whose qualifying job for this was to be the commissioner of the Department of Sanitation, and whose qualifier for that was to be the daughter of a very rich man in New York. I have to say, if I was a cop in New York and she was given a press conference, she would be inspiring zero confidence. Zero. Hey, Alex, do you have that audio clip from Charlie of her giving a press conference? Yeah, you do. All right. Anyway, did you see any of her press conferences, Vic?
I had.
What did you think? How did you feel about her?
I don't. Eric Adams, you got to remember, Eric Adams and I were active around the same time. I don't know him personally, but I know his act. You're 100% right. In my opinion, it was a political appointment. It's his band, and he picks the song, and they got to dance. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, because I want a Kelly. I want a Bratton. I forget Bratton. I want Bratton's wife. Did you ever meet Bill Bratton's wife? She's terrifying. I saw her going into a restaurant, jumping out of a van, announcing that she was Bill Bratton's wife. Everybody bowed and scraped. I'm like, yeah, I want her to be the police commissioner. Meanwhile, we have this sofa. She reminds me of a sofa. She gets up there. She has no emotion. She takes up a lot of space. Yes, I'm being pejorative. I just don't get it. And if I was a cop, I would not be running out to make her look good.
It seems like the city of New York, the last two administrations, is on a quest to demoralize the New York City Police Department.
It does. And I'm very grateful that you have successfully retired. You have your pension. And no matter what you say about her, they can't take that away from you. Vic Ferrari, what is the name of your latest book?
My latest book is NYPD Presumption and Dysfunction. It's available on Amazon.
Available on Amazon. Vic Ferrari on Sterling every damn night. It's
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Purse snatching bungle. Strippers on the loose. Later. Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
If you're going shoplifting, have a plan. Explain. The people of Walmart. Later. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by TikTok videos.
Never put these six foods in the fridge, otherwise you wouldn't even know how you died. One, ginger.
Oh my gosh, look at this. Tonight, this evening, I had to go to my wife's choral chorus performance of Christmas songs at the Catholic Church. And it's a good Catholic church, Father. The crazy priest is listening right now. Therefore, I figure I'd make my Catholic references. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Hi. This is a live network radio show from coast to coast from WGAN in Maine. Phil Zachary's radio station, the great Phil Zachary. The man born to wear a general manager's suit. I've only known three people, three executives in radio, who actually know how to dress. I'm not exaggerating. David Yadgarov, he's the president of Odyssey Philadelphia. Phil Zachary, who works for Saga Broadcasting in Portland, Maine, and runs WGAN and their cluster of many, many stations. And by the way, I mentioned that to Steve Goldstein, who used to be head of programming for Saga. I've mentioned it to him three times now, and it's met with daunting silence. I don't really understand why. And who else? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. A man named Joaquin Blaya. Joaquin Blaya was the first head of programming for Univision in America. When Univision launched in America, he was like the Rune Arledge of Hispanic media. I used to sit there watching Joaquin Blaya when he ran Radio Unica. After Univision, he was head of programming at Telemundo. No, he became CEO of Telemundo. He's the CEO of Telemundo. And then he went out on his own, bought some radio stations, and he owned a piece of and was the president of Radio Unica in Miami. I'm telling you, Joaquin would come into the room and it was resplendent with color and light and reflections. And it was unbelievable. And finally, one day I said to Joaquin, I said, where do you get your shirts? Turnbull and Asser in London. Now, Turnbull and Asser has stores in the United States. But Joaquin, Mr. Blaya, did not go to Turnbull and Asser on 57th Street in Manhattan. No. And I'm sure they have one in Beverly Hills. Probably not too many other places. I don't think you'll find one in Alabama. Not being pejorative about Alabama, but I am. Joaquin, I said, Joaquin, where do you get these shirts? I never saw combinations like this. They're beautiful, resplendent. And I didn't even want to know about the suits because the suits were sprayed on him. They had to be $4,000 suits and $1,000 shoes. I didn't even know where you got things like this. I went to Brooks Brothers. I have a body built for Brooks Brothers. He may have two, but in his suits, he looked like an Olympian. The hair was perfect. The tan was magnificent. I'm at Univision in Miami, at the parking lot at Univision in Miami. Now, you can't imagine this. I thought that I had made the wrong turn and I was in a Mercedes dealership. As far as the eyes could see, there were white luxury cars, not sports cars, nothing tacky. These were Mercedes, top of the line Mercedes. And I always get it confused. Is it the C or the E? That's the more expensive one. You see, that's why I'm never allowed to own one. I have a Chrysler Pacifica. I got a Pacifica. It's good in snow. My car is good in snow. let me tell you, if you're buying a car because it's good in snow, you're at the wrong end of the food chain. Yeah, I got cards for good in snow. It's easy to vacuum. Emergency brake works really good on a hill. Yeah, in the E-Class Mercedes, they never think about those things. The car stops by itself. It parks itself on the hill. It doesn't give anyone any trouble. And I there must have been 100 white Mercedes glistening in the noon sun at Univision in Miami, the epicenter of Latino culture in the United States, in the upper 48. It's not like Canada, which views us as the lower 48. If you're Hispanic, this is the upper 48, because you have migrated here from Brazil and Chile and Mexico legally. It's a whole different culture. It's an astonishing culture. Nothing but respect. I said to Joaquin, I said, did you... I'm looking at these Mercedes. We got out of a Mercedes, a white Mercedes. Everywhere I'm looking is a white Mercedes. I'm not kidding. Oh, over there, there may be some cute Jaguars for those single boys. But it's white Jaguars and white Mercedes in every square inch of the Univision parking lot in Miami. And I said, Mr. Blaya, sir, is everybody who works here rich? Yes. Why? Because there are only two of us, Univision and Telemundo. All of the money goes to us. This is some racket. In the best sense of the word, all of the television money in the 48 states for Hispanic language citizens goes to two companies. They have all the money they'll ever need. It doesn't matter if they go down a couple million. It doesn't matter if they go up. It doesn't matter. It's all going to come to them or their cousin. Them or their cousin. And I learned while working for Mr. Blaya that the most powerful people in America are bilingual Hispanics. Second generation bilingual Hispanic, because they were raised by people who spoke fluent Spanish in a culture that was fluent English, and they know both English and Spanish without an accent. Most of the people that I met at Radio Unica would have to tell me that they were Latino or Hispanic because they spoke English without an accent, and then boom, they spoke Spanish fluently, and they had access to what? Both economies, both societies, both cultures. That's a powerful group of people. Just like you, my Midnight Misfit. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Mark Simone.
I'm sure they love their country, but they don't like their country. They don't like Friday night football. They don't like hot dogs. They don't like the 4th of July. It's the worst day of the year for them.
Boom, boom, Hollywood. Sterling every damn night.
Look at you. Mr. Hollywood, what's your temperature in Hollywood right now to make the rest of the country jealous?
51 degrees.
And you know, that's exactly what it is in Florida. And therefore, I come to the special conclusion there is 1 week a year that in Florida and Los Angeles, it's in the 50s. And that's when everybody runs to Piggly Wiggly in Florida or Vons in Los Angeles to get a log of firewood for the one fireplace that might work in their house.
Yeah, it seems great, except here in California, and being California, they don't let us burn anything this time of year because they're afraid the sparks will take out the whole neighborhood. So we don't even get to burn things here. So
not
we just freeze.
Not the worst decision. This is Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood. Thank you very much for being on Sterling every damn night and Sterling on Sunday. Are you feeling festive? Are you starting to feel the holidays? Or are you starting to feel broke like I am?
Well, both, and I'm scratching my head because listening to this great program. You see, I am from Chile originally. I speak two languages. I have a Mercedes-Benz. I've had wonderful custom-made shirts by Henry Poole from Savile Row, and yet I have no money, probably because I have done all of these things. But there you have it. Maybe I should work for Univision.
Everybody at Univision, it's really very interesting. Every talent on the air on Univision and Telemundo, all the ones who do those talk shows, Cristina, Don Francisco, all of them speak English without an accent. They have total access to both sides of the economy, both parts of the economy, all of our culture. They're amazing. I never forget working with Radio Unica in Miami. All of the big Univision and Telemundo stars would come through there to do talk shows or to be guests, and I'd talk to them, and I'm like talking to Morty from Brooklyn, and then they'd go on the air and Cuba Libre, and it was, and then they'd put on their $2,000 sports jacket, they'd brush up their $1,000 loafers, and they'd get in their white Jaguars. It was unbelievable, and then they all live in Boca. No, I'm sorry, not Boca, in Coral Gables. They all live in Coral Gables in these mansions on the water with their own pet alligators. It's an astonishing culture. Absolutely astonishing culture. And then...
Wow.
And then, now, you know, by the way, you know, for I believe to this day, the longest running, continuous running, no repeat television show was Sábado Gigante, hosted by Don Francisco. Mm-hmm. And which started in Chile. And
correct.
Mm-hmm. Right? Started in Chile, as did Joaquin Blaya. And Joaquin Blaya's father was the Paul Harvey of Chile. So this is a big media company. Oh, my God. But anyway, Don Francisco, however, was born and raised in Brooklyn and lived there till he was seven. Has a Brooklyn accent, moved with his family to Chile when he was like seven or eight. And then started the show there and brought it to South Florida later in life. But he was, his real name was Murray Kretschmer. And his real name was, and his poor parents escaped the Holocaust. And it's a hell of a story. But, and the most stereotypical thing I witnessed through all of this that just made me laugh is when you reach a certain age, by law, you have to go visit the Social Security office. I went to visit the Social Security office in on 33rd Street in Manhattan. The elevator doors open of the Social Security office, and all you could see was a life-size cutout of Don Francisco welcoming you. I'm like, no, please don't let me say anything. Anyway, tell me about the movies, buddy.
Sure thing. We've got a movie in theaters right now from Vertical Entertainment called The Order, set up in the early 80s when a string of bank robberies, of armored car heists, and other things were happening in the Pacific Northwest. And a single FBI agent, Terry Husk, who's played in the movie by June Law, begins to suspect these crimes aren't being perpetrated by criminals out for money, but by a group of extreme anti-Jewish white supremacist terrorists and a radical new leader they have, Bob Matthews, played by Nicholas Hoult. It's a good year for Nicholas Hoult. He's got Nosferatu coming up. He was in that great movie, Juror Number 2. It seems to be his year. Anyway, he's rising up in the ranks, plotting a war against the U.S. government. And it's based on the book, maybe you remember it, from 1989, The Silent Brotherhood, by Denver's Rocky Mountain News reporters Kevin Flynn and Gary Gerhardt, about this horrible supremacist group. Director Justin Kersel really establishes sort of the creepy insular world of these guys. And Jude Law's performance, probably amongst his best. And I think Nicholas Hoult can't lose this year. He's doing pretty good. So I think this is a really, really good movie. It keeps you on the edge of your seat. And of course, the scary thing is it's based in actual events.
And what's the big box office this weekend?
Well, it seems that Moana 2 is still raking it in. Just on Friday alone, $12 million. Up until now, since it started, it's almost $260 million, which is right on the heels of Wicked, which is aggregate now at about $295 million. But it beat Wicked this weekend, which only pulled in $9.6
million. How much?
$9.6 million just this weekend for Wicked, and Moana 2 did $12
million. Aren't you surprised that Wicked tanked so fast?
Not at all. Because
tell me
on
why.
This program,
tell me why. Yes.
On this program, I said that the movie is too long and it's too much of a good thing. And it's only the first half of the movie. I mean, the first half of the Broadway show, that is. All the fans went. Everybody loved it. The people who were destined to love it loved it. And the rest of the people who were the average moviegoer saying, almost 3 hours and no intermissions?
And it isn't over. And yet, and this is the worst part. That's you thought that was the worst part. Here's the worst part about Wicked not being over. This really is the worst part. We have known the ending for our entire lives. There's no surprise. We've known the ending since we were born.
Just about.
Right?
Some prenatally, even, yeah.
Yeah. And usually shown right about this time of year. The other thing about Wicked is, in my opinion, there were people who were maybe on the fence. Should we see it? Should we take our kids? I don't know. And then they saw those awful interviews with Ariana Grande and Elio, whatever her name is. And we saw those awful interviews where, like, they were speaking from a different planet, a different dimension. And the interviewer said, yes, we're saving space for this. And they're all going, oh, yes, that's it. You're saving space for us. And we're like, no, not at $18 a ticket. I'm not saving you space.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Walter.
Now, listen, how do we get in touch with you at all times? I want my listeners to start to bother you during the week.
Great. Matias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook. That's spelled M-A-T-I-A-S-B-O-M-B-A-L. Let me repeat that. M-A-T-I-A-S-B-O-M-B-A-L Hollywood on Facebook, and you'll find out all the latest.
You do a great, great job for this show. I wish you the happiest of holidays. Anytime you have urgent movie news, just call. We'll put you right on. I don't offer that to, say, Velo Hool with his Walmart reports. We try to restrict those as much as we can. But you, Mateus, you're a freaking star. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Lesbians.
Lesbian.
I don't know what that is, sweetie. I don't know what you mean.
Lesbian.
No, I know what you said, but I don't think that word means what you think it means, okay?
It's like spaghetti.
Do you mean lasagna? I'm sure we can have lasagna really soon. Okay? We'll try to we'll make sure that we can eat that soon, okay? Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Purse snatching bungle. Strippers on the loose. Later. Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
If you're going shoplifting, have a plan. Explained. The people of Walmart. Later. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night, inspired by Jimmy O. Yang.
I'm not Korean, I'm Chinese. And he looked back to his friends, he's like, oh, pinche chinito, huh? And I'm like, sir, you do know that I can understand what that means, okay? I have Mexican friends back home just like you. He was like, no, I'm not Mexican, I'm El Salvador. And I'm like, oh, great, now I'm the racist.
Feel the dough. Eat the dough, J.B. Bakery, Selena and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
J.B. Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. We like J.B. Bakery. They're not paying for this time. They couldn't afford it. The fact is that almost no company can afford it. The show is so successful that they're in line. Now listen, JB Bakery is one of those bakeries that your grandmother used to take you to. You'd walk in, it smelled like a real bakery. The nice person behind the counter would say, oh, you're so cute, would you like to have a cookie? And then you'd grab more than you were supposed to. And you'd avoid those ones with the candied red cherry or green cherry on top that were awful. You tried to get one of the chocolate chip ones or the butter balls. Yes, I know the tricks. Walter M. Sterling, this is Sterling every damn Sunday. Good evening. We are here for 3 hours every Sunday night from 10 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. in Sacramento to whenever they cut us off. Some capricious arbitrary thing. Are they still running this? Are they still running our spots? Let's just make sure about that. Stephen and the honest part of you, welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night. Now, Stephen, I understand you claim to be sick.
I claim to be sick. I feel great, Walter. I had a busy Thanksgiving holiday, but I'm back in gear, and we're ramped up for Christmas. I got lots of great ingredients. I got red cherries. We're putting red cherries on a lot of stuff. I don't know who's not picking those, but they love red cherries at JB Bakery, especially on top of the butter cookies.
Well, I didn't say red cherries. I said candied red cherries.
Right, see, the candied ones.
The candied ones. Little kids don't like the candied ones. They like real ones, yeah. But they don't like the candied ones.
Nah, they don't. They don't. They like stuff like anything that has like M&Ms on it or sprinkles.
Yes.
Definitely lots of sprinkles. That's what kids
yes.
love.
You can manage that. Now, what's the name of this this cake you're featuring right now? What's it? I can't pronounce it.
The Struffoli?
Struffoli. Is that how you pronounce it? Struffoli.
The little dough balls, right?
These are
Struffoli.
Dough balls.
Some people just say it's Struffoli.
Struffoli. These are coated in honey, right?
Yeah, it's a honey glaze. It's very simple, and they're fun to make.
These are in the category of desserts that I was always afraid of.
Because of what, the sprinkles? What made you afraid of them?
The dense honey coating, and then and anytime I got near it, the dough was too dense. It
yeah,
wasn't light.
Must not be making them right.
I'm sure of that. Now, you're offering a you're offering to Midnight Misfits the recipe.
Yeah, this is definitely one that I wanted to get into your hands early in December. This way people had time to prepare and make plans to have this for any kind of Christmas celebration. This is a fun thing to make when you have guests over because they could get them involved. They could roll up the dough pieces, they could fry them in the oil, and then they could coat them in the honey glaze. And they could build, use the pieces to build like either like a round-shaped wreath or a Christmas tree, decorate it with more glazed red cherries, you know, the candy cherries to make it look nice and festive. And they're fun to eat because they have the nonpareil sprinkles, like those little those beady-looking sprinkles, the rainbow ones. That makes it look like a festive Christmas treat. So it's like an Italian-style thing, and Selena kind of knows about it because she grew up in the Italian family, and she remembers it from those kind of Christmas dinners and desserts you know, during their Christmas parties. So she has.
But Selena, as a child, were you ever afraid of these things?
Well, I have to say, I definitely relate to being afraid of them because as beautiful as it looks, your hand gets stuck to it as soon as you touch it. So as a child, you reach out for this glistening dessert that everyone says is amazing, and it is very good, but you do get stuck to it, so it's definitely a little bit scary.
It's sort of an Italian baklava.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. It's very sweet, and if you like donuts, you would like that, so I would recommend it.
I grew up in a family that was half Italian, and we avoided that side of our family. And my mother would always say, oh, those desserts are too heavy. They're just too heavy. And then she'd go to the German desserts, which were always very light. This was the battle that raged in the culture wars in my home.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I mean, definitely on my dad's side, it was all the Italian desserts. And then my mom's side was a little bit different and, you know, just a bunch of different cultures and different traditions that we would have. And then, of course, we always created our own over the years. But my grandmother, she always used to make the struffoli, so they're really special to my dad, even though they are a little sticky and scary.
The struffoli, how long does it take to make it start to finish?
It's pretty easy to make. I mean, you could fry them up, and you can prepare the dough ahead of time and then bring it out when you're ready. And just fry them up and stick them together and make a nice tree or wreath out of them. But yeah, the thing is, you've got to have them right away.
Yeah, you have. Oh, you have to eat them right away. Why?
Because they get hard. And then, you know, if you start having family disputes at Christmas, you can use them to throw them at people if you don't eat them right away.
Well, I encourage family disputes because it gives me material for my show. If you would like Stephen the Baker's amazing recipe for a strufola, send me an email, WalterMSterling@gmail.com, and I will send it to you, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. And Stephen makes these recipes as easy as they can possibly be with great coaching tips and encouragement and photos of him and Selena. I wish you both fantastic holiday season. I look forward to talking to you two on Wednesday night. I'm Walter M. Sterling. I have an email address. I'll give it to you again, and then you can send us a request for the recipe for strufoli. Yeah, just write recipe. You don't have to know how to spell strufoli. Strufoli. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I'll send it right out to you by tomorrow night. It's a full show, you know, and I have a phone number, and it's open, 855-839-1210, for whatever you want to talk about, 855-839-1210.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
You know what's worse than having to listen to Christmas carols continuously? Having to listen to non-hit Christmas carols. And now, your weather.
Wishing you a bright and meaningful Kwanzaa from Sterling every damn night.
All right, so there's a special horror to having to listen to Christmas songs hour after hour. I imagine if you work retail, you work at a Starbucks, a Dunkin' Donuts, a major department store, a minor department store, many public service vehicles, buses, trains, they all have piped in Muzak. And you have to listen to these Christmas carols from Thanksgiving until December 25th at midnight. That's when they all stop. Imagine, today I had to go to church, to Catholic church, where my wife sings in the choir. And you know, choirs are a new thing in Catholic churches. Only in the past 50 years did Catholicism acknowledge singing. And I'm sitting there listening to her sing and the chorus sing, and they're very beautiful and very professional. And it's a lovely church, and I'm allowing myself to be carried away by the moment. And I realize that song after song is a song I've never heard before. Now, I'm a professional broadcaster, as are you. And for decades, I have listened to Christmas music on the radio. Sometimes I've even programmed Christmas music on the radio. Sometimes I've even tested it to see what are the most popular Christmas songs. That's a whole different show. And I realize after an hour of listening to the choir in my wife's church, in our church, that they never sang one song I ever heard before. There's nothing worse than people who are obsessed with music discovery. Yeah, I really like music, and I think there are so many great songs that need to be exposed, that deserve to be played. You realize that Sirius, XM, Pandora, Spotify, they were all created by these a-holes who believed in the need for music to be discovered, to be exposed. And then they found out that we did not want Swedish folk tunes just because they needed to be exposed. No, Bob Geldof, we did not want Aboriginal music, Native music. We didn't want it. I actually heard Bob Geldof give a speech about how the Australian broadcasters and the audience needed to play more Aboriginal music. And I had to come on after him. Oh, my God. I'm sitting in this church today, and I realize that song after song not only is not a hit, but it is a ponderous telling of the tale of Christmas put to music, but ponderous and long and not rhyming. And oh my God, non-hit Christmas music in a Catholic church. They had one hit at the end. They sang Little Drummer Boy. Why couldn't they have mixed in more hits? No, because you see, I could tell by that music director that he was on a mission from public radio to expose more non-hit Christmas music. And what can you say? You're sacrilegious if you say anything. You're not a good sport. You're against the church. You're against singing. You're against your wife if you say anything at all. Anything. In California, there was this big article today in the Daily Mail about Dunham Day Classical School. Dunham, D-O-N-U-M, Dunham Dia or Day. Oh, it must be Dia. Dunham Dia Classical School, Classical Academy. This is in a rich suburb of Los Angeles or San Francisco, rich suburb of San Francisco. It has 66 kids. It costs $30,000 a year. And its purpose is to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. Yes, not to discuss social issues. Good. No debates over pronouns. Excellent. And to infuse Christian values into this school. Okay, there are only 66 kids. It's been around 3 or 4 years. It was founded and funded by a venture capitalist who was determined to get back to classical values in school. And I'm reading this article, and they're going on about how hot a school it is, how the rich people in the community want to get their kids in there. They want to return to traditional values, reading, writing, and arithmetic. All good. All fine. That's what you want. Great. And they want to establish the Christian values. Okay. And not have any wacky, cutting-edge, woke textbooks. No forced gender change surgeries. Okay. And then I'm like, wait a minute. That's a parochial school. That's a Catholic school. How is that different than a Catholic school? It's a Christian school. How is that different than an evangelical school in the South? It's not. Reading, writing, arithmetic with a sprinkling of religion. That's all Catholic schools are. And these here days, the Catholic schools are far more secular than any Christian school, I'll bet you. Because so much bad press over the past 100 years, you know, the Indian reservation schools. Remember, you saw that in that terrible show, 1926. Remember that? The Indian, what they call them, reformatory schools or something. They took those poor kids off of Indians, away from their parents, forced them to learn the ways of the white man, forced them to learn the ways of the white man. But that's all it is, this Dunham Dia Classical School. I don't understand how in the Daily Mail it gets a half-a-page article, because all it is a parochial school. That's all it is. My number is 855-839-1210. Happy holidays, Walter M. Sterling. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Holidays mean strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Miami-Dade. They're home to an awesome exotic dancing emporium, a gentleman's club, a cabaret called the Booby Trap. Yeah, the Booby Trap. Set in Alejandro Caballero Calzada. Apparently was in the club, and it was not like overnight. It was early in the evening, and it was a great opportunity to get somebody who had a lot of money. Victim, by the way, working at the club, her bag was on the bar. And Senen Alejandro grabbed the purse, went on the run, but the victim was able to hold on to the straps and told Caballero Calzada to give her purse, but he refused. According to the report, the victim slapped and kicked Caballero Calzada. During the struggle, security eventually got between them. Police say Caballero Calzada was still holding onto the victim's bag as he's being escorted into the lobby by security. Victim followed, and another struggle ensued, and she was able to get her purse back. Hey, exotic dancers, don't leave your purse filled with ones sitting on top of the bar, because there are thieves in your midst. Not only the customers, but perhaps your fellow dancers. From the Champagne Room, this is Vila Hool, Sterling every damn night.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
If you're going shoplifting, have a plan. Explained. The people of Walmart. Later. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by NASA.
Remember when NASA sent a woman to space for only 6 days and they gave her 100 tampons?
I'm so in love with this comic. This guy is 73 years old and he's a stand-up comic, and he was on America's Got Talent, and he doesn't for a second pretend to be younger than he is.
A friend on Facebook suggested I get a bicycle. That friend's been blocked. I do exercise. I start every morning with 10 minutes of coughing in place, followed by 15 minutes of CPR.
Alan the comic. It's brilliant stuff. All right, look at you. It's 21 past the hour, 21 past the hour, coast to coast, Sterling, every damn night. Now, I say every damn night because I am, in fact, on every night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. East Coast time. In order to hear that joy, that fantastico stuff that makes Drew Anderson very nervous, just very nervous. He was so nervous that at exactly the wrong moment, he took my show off WSB. I've lost almost no stations in the 10 years we've been on. But he took it off WSB, made up some nonsense, and now he thinks that Ken Charles should put it back on. Well, really, Drew? When you were there, why'd you do that? Why are you making Ken have to go through this? And Ken's always nervous when I'm around. He always says things like, yeah, you know, man, that's like a really good show. I don't know if it's right for our station. It's a really good show. Yeah, it's right for your station. It gets ratings. That's the insanity I've had to deal with my whole career. I ran an adult contemporary station. One that, you know, a Lady Gaga kind of station. A Billie Eilish kind of station. Yes, I know how to pronounce it. Katy Perry. Taylor Swift, that kind of station. And on Saturday nights, we had Saturday with Sinatra. And what was that? It was 5 hours of Sinatra songs on Saturday night. And the rest of the station was all current, contemporary, hit music. But on Saturday nights in New York, we played Sinatra. And then on Sunday nights at 10 p.m., I put on Dr. Ruth Westheimer, not Frank Osborne. I did. And I put her on with Pete Salant, Al Brady Law, and Dan Griffin and Betty Elin. These are the names to hold up high as to the ones who discovered, nourished, encouraged, petted Dr. Ruth Westheimer. We put her on Sunday nights from 10 to midnight, a talk show about sex, where she said what BJ meant. Every week she said it. Every week. Let me repeat that. Every week. No licenses were lost. No complaints were filed because people are grown-ups. And regularly, serious-minded programmers would say, why are you playing Sinatra on this station? Why are you doing that? And why do you have a talk show on Sunday night? Why do you do that? I said, because I am not here to air adult contemporary music or top 40 music or classical music or any of the above. I'm here to get audience share of audience, otherwise known as ratings, like this show gets ratings. It doesn't matter how I do it. My job is to deliver as big an audience as I can possibly get. And sometimes that means we're just going to play Sinatra for 5 hours. What did that mean? That meant that on Saturday nights, listen to this, geniuses. Listen to this, voice tracking geniuses. It meant that on Saturday night, that was the night, that was the time when the radio station got the highest rates for its commercials of any time during the week. More than afternoon drive, morning drive, blah, blah, blah. Why? Well, our sales department had a very smart way to sell Saturday with Sinatra. This requires creativity. They took out the listings of the retail businesses in the tri-state area, and they looked up every Italian surnamed owned business. Every business with an Italian surname, and they called them. And they said, Frank wants you to buy. That's all they said. Frank wants you to buy. Oh, Frank wants me to buy time on the show. Yes, wants you to buy commercials on the show. How much is it? $1,000 a minute. $5,000 a minute. They could make up any price. And then once a year, God bless him, Sid Mark, the host and creator of Saturday with Sinatra, who, did he just go into the Radio Hall of Fame? I think he did, as a legacy. Radio Hall of Fame. Yeah, he did. He did. Sid Mark. He goes in the Radio Hall of Fame. Once a year, Frank would come on the show and read the commercials. What was that worth? That was gold. Frank would come on and, yeah, I want you to go see my friend Vinny, who's got this auto parts shop in Queens. He'll cut you a deal, no problem. It was great. And then on Sunday nights, we did the talk show like this with Dr. Ruth Westheimer. And Dr. Ruth Westheimer, before TV, before magazine, before People magazine, she was on the FM station I ran in New York City, WYNY, 10 to midnight, taking phone calls. To this day, I am told by the ratings authorities, no talent has ever achieved a higher share of adults 18 to 34 years of age than Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Was it a talk station? No. Was it a station that appealed to 18 to 34-year-olds? Yes. And therefore, I used every weapon I could get. But you wouldn't believe, oh, my God, oh, no, you can't do that. And every Monday morning, the NBC Standards and Practices Department would come to my office at 30 Rock and have a little debate with me about some of the things Dr. Ruth said. And she talked about sex in very explicit ways. Nobody died. Everybody's still alive. In fact, there are more people today because Dr. Ruth talked explicitly about sex. In fact, what did she do? Promote the one thing we're here for, which is to procreate. Amazingly, salespeople, FCC people, no one cared. Absolutely, they were totally entertained. It was always just fine. And I used to look at them and I'd say, well, those are really interesting points, guys. Do you want to tell Dr. Ruth yourselves? And then they'd all get a little quiet. And I'd say, because, you know, she has a Purple Heart from having two wounds from her service in the Israeli army. She has two PhDs and she's 4'11". Which of you is going to stand up to Dr. Ruth? Oh, whoa. It's okay. I tell you, it's that time.
It's Christmas time in the air, and you'll find Sterling every damn night, everywhere.
And then I see these very scary postings. There's a scary posting on Facebook tonight that showed a photograph of the CEO of Pfizer Drugs. And the headline was something like, this is a photograph of the CEO of Pfizer Drugs, in case you're interested. And I'm like, no. That's not okay. We can't go there. We don't put up pictures of the CEOs of pharmaceuticals and other insurance companies and suggest maybe it's okay to deal with them in a tragic and really stupid way. That was still up on Facebook when I went on the air tonight. Now, if I went up on Facebook and said I really question the veracity of vaccines, or I'm supportive of Donald Trump, I'd forget it. Not only would I be blocked, my account would be removed. And it was. And it was when I said, you know, that third vaccine, that's a doozy. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by Daughter's Secrets.
Every family member has that one daughter that's expensive, that's mentally unstable, with anger issues, with a short temper, and that hates loud noises, but she's the loud one. Is that you?
To you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling every damn night. Oy, 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 oy.
855-839-1210. I just saw an astonishing fact, ladies and gentlemen. Let me find it, because, you know, in radio, we don't deal in actual facts. We deal in radio facts. Not only will the new Starbucks CEO earn over $116 million per year, he's also receiving $85 million in cash and stock just to leave Chipotle for Starbucks. How about we all buy our pumpkin spice lattes this fall from our local coffee shops and support them instead? If he was earning $115 million a year to be the CEO of Dunkin' Donuts, I'd say it's not enough. To be the CEO of Starbucks, it's easy. It already has cachet. He doesn't have to do anything about that. The last CEO made such a fatal error, such a horrible, stupid error, that this guy's going to look like a genius. First thing he's going to do, you ready? I don't know if you could have come up with this for $116 million, but you may recall that through most of your life in Starbucks, there was a Fixin's bar. Creamer, Splenda, the pink stuff, the blue stuff, Equal, Stirrers, Tops. That all used to be on the counter for you to do. There were two advantages to that. One is that the drinks were faster, because then the person behind the counter didn't have to waste time on your Splenda. And also, it was exactly the way you wanted. This is exactly how you want it. You ready for this? I don't know if you can handle this. This new CEO went, I know what I'll do for $116 million. I'll bring back the Fixin's bar. Outstanding. Next, it'll occur to him to stop putting the coffee in airtight containers when it's ground. Now, when you walk into a Starbucks, do you smell the aroma of coffee? No. Why? Because when they grind the coffee at Starbucks, it's in a plastic concealed container. It no longer is in the open air. I don't know what imaginary reason there was for that. No doubt some imaginary health code issue in Oregon. But we don't live in Oregon, do we? No, we live in the real world of St. Louis. Catherine Arthur. Rebecca Canner. Neil Paul. Judy Paul. Leslie Kelly, all my dearests, welcome Midnight Misfits. You and I don't fit in. We are loners. We are introverts. That means we have the best ideas. That means we don't waste time worrying about whether or not everybody will like us or like our ideas. We already like ourselves fine. That's, how do you know? Because we like to be alone. We're not forced to be alone. We volunteer to be alone. We volunteer to be alone even while traveling. You go to a friend's house at the holiday. You go to a friend's house. You're forced to go to a Christmas party by your significant other, or somebody you're vaguely interested in is at the Christmas party, the holiday party, the Kwanzaa party. You show up at their house. What do? You sit in their car. You don't get out of your car. You sit there until it's the right time to get out. How do you know? You know. You just know when it's the right time. Then you get out. But we have to decompress between event to event to event. people who are introverts cannot rush from party to party, cannot rush from classroom to classroom, patient to patient, bus stop to bus stop. We need a little time to process. That's who we are. And you know that's who you are because you never even thought of it just now. That's what you do. There you are, my friends, working in the lobby of an office building, guarding the office building, the night watchman at a hospital, an auditorium, a stadium. Oh, that must be cool. Could you imagine being a night watch person at a stadium? And there are 50,000 seats empty. And you can go and sit in any of them. Behind first base, no problem. Behind the blue line, no problem. 3 points, no problem. Go on the floor and throw a 3-point, no problem. Definitely not not a Sixer. Definitely not a Sixer. But what a joyful time to work at a stadium right now. What a terrific time to be a bus driver, a public bus driver, because it's a very special clientele at this time of day, but very needed. They need you, and they might even have something interesting to say. As long as you have the bulletproof glass, or as long as you have a really good communication system in that public bus, I happen to believe in one aspect of communism, socialism. All public transportation should be free. It should all be free. Why? Because there isn't a public transportation system that I know of that makes money. Well, why don't you just step back and admit it? It loses money. It's subsidized anyway. SEPTA in Philadelphia is going to lose like $250 million this year. I can't even imagine what the MTA in New York loses. It must be insane how much money they lose. But therefore, admit it and make it free. Allow it to be free. Doesn't that make sense? And in the handful of European countries where it is free, like Norway, those are beautiful trains, beautiful buses. Oh, my gosh. Safe, happy. They don't stink. They're not like public transportation buses in most cities that just stink. In most cities, they think it's a big innovation if it has USB ports. I don't think that's a big innovation. I think a big innovation is if it doesn't stink. That's what I think is a big innovation. Past the hour. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
It's the deep of Walmart on Sterling at night.
Organized retail theft is a thing. In fact, we've spoken about a lot. If you're going to go shoplifting at your neighborhood Walmart or the Target or any store, it's best to have a shoplifting buddy. A lot of times people can use someone to interfere with the associates and be able to get the good stuff right in their pocket, especially if they're picking the locks to get either toothpaste or electronics. Redding, California. That's near Mount Shasta, where they see all the aliens. Seven people working together, mostly from Anderson, California, but someone from Red Bluff and Redding and Cottonwood. So they go in, they do a sophisticated shoplifting effort. The Blue Heroes from Walmart, the vested associates, those people are no fools. They realize something was going down. They called the cops. The police run in and doggone it, pick up these wonderful people. They range in age from 18 to 53, including one that seems like she's the daughter of one of the shoplifters. You know, you want to keep it in the family. That was Christina Sean Warren. She's 43. And then Ariana Mackenzie Warren, 18. And this was both men and women. They worked together as a team. Lisa Marie Mitchell, Cody Shea Wyckoff, Miranda, Ann Smith, Ryan Patrick Maines, and Daniel Lee Schmitz. So again, helpful hint, you get out of the store. You don't sit around standing there. You really need someone set up as your getaway driver, especially with this many shoplifters. You want to make sure you're in a position to get away immediately, pronto, with the stuff. I recommend either using a stolen license plate or a stolen vehicle, because that'll make it tougher for the cops to trace you. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Judy.
The three of you tried to be roommates. It didn't work out, and now you're bothering us.
You're right, Your Honor.
You're right. I know I'm right. So let's deal with this quickly and expeditiously, because it's sushi day today.
Yeah, I was sharing with you the fact that on Facebook right now, there's a totally offensive posting. Somebody put up a picture of the Pfizer CEO with the headline that said, in case you wonder what he looks like, the Pfizer CEO. And I'm like, it's not a veiled threat about the life of the Pfizer CEO in light of the murder of the CEO of United Healthcare. And with similar hatred, right? Similar hatred. If I went on Facebook and said, I really question the third COVID vaccine, that was a doozy. That made me sick. And it did. If I posted that, or if I said, yeah, go, Donald Trump, you're great. If I posted that, I'd be blocked, or my account would be removed. And it was. And it was. At the height of the COVID vaccine excitement, I got a third vaccine. It knocked me out for 3 days. It gave me every symptom there was of Parkinson's. All of them. And I posted was, had the third vaccine. Boy, is that a doozy. Gee, about 4,000 of my followers were removed. My photos were removed. And I was encouraged to start a new account. But here's a photo of the CEO of Pfizer. And gee, in case you're curious what he looks like, here it is. That's okay. And then a trade column suggests that I hope somebody shoots him, and was referring to the CEO of Live Nation, most hated company in the world. What could be more hated than Live Nation? I can think of a lot of things that could be hated more than Live Nation. a lot. If you have trouble with Live Nation, I would say that defines a luxury problem, that you can afford the money and the time to go see a live concert, a live event, get yourself there, pay for the parking, get yourself home, pay for the babysitter, choose the right seats, get the right seats, act fast enough, beat the algorithm. Yeah, there are a lot of things about Live Nation that are troublesome, but ultimately it's not food, clothing, shelter. Therefore, it's a luxury. And if I have trouble with Live Nation, that's a luxury problem. And yet one of the trade journals, the headline was, somebody should shoot the CEO. No, nobody should shoot any CEO, no matter how stupid they are, no matter how stupid their company is. You know, the bad joke was that that poor guy who got killed in New York City, that CEO, that they took him to a hospital that wasn't in network, and that's why he died. That's a terrible thing to say. Isn't that a terrible thing to say? All right, Vic Ferrari says, our in-house detective, our retired New York City police detective, he believes that it was very well planned. And I said to him, don't you think with all these photos that the NYPD knows exactly who it is? And he says, yeah, they might be withholding that because they want to make sure that the case is airtight when they bring the guy in. And that makes a lot of sense. Now then, over North Jersey, where there's always trouble, people fighting endlessly over the worst Walmart, how to get off of Route 1 North, not South, Route 1 North, the best pizza. Well, now, there are all these drones, giant Volkswagen-sized drones flying over Donald Trump's golf course. And people are wondering, where did these come from? How do they exist? I think this is an easy one. If you're flying something over the President of the United States golf course, residence, home, whatever you want to call it, those would have been shot down right away if they didn't know exactly what it was and knew exactly that it wasn't a threat. But Dave Scott will join us in just seconds and explain whether or not this is true. I have a website, and you can get your Midnight Misfit membership card by going to the website. WalterMSterling@gmail. No, that's my email. WalterMSterling@gmail. My website, WalterSterlingShow.com. WalterSterlingShow.com. And you can download your Midnight Misfit membership card, which has a decoder on it. And when I give secret messages, you can only decode it with that. As Billy Datz in Pittman, New Jersey knows, Catherine Arthur, Rebecca Canner, Stan Deitz, and Charlie Green, a handful of the very impressive Midnight Misfits. What's special about us? We don't fit in. That's why we're so smart. We run a purity of ideas. Here are my ideas. I think these will solve the problem. I think these are good. I've thought it through endlessly 100 times, and I don't care if you like me. And that's where team players screw up. They need to be liked. Do you need to be liked? Not me. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
All right, good evening, Walter M. Sterling. Welcome, my Midnight Misfits. Yes, that's you. And now, weather from Dr. Dave.
Sterling, every night, lost in space. Mission control.
The legendary Dave Scott, a great Canadian who has agreed to condescend to the lower 48. Dave Scott, there's been just too much activity. There's just been too many reports about strange drones over the president's golf course, as though those wouldn't have been shot down immediately if they were any sort of threat. Clearly not a threat. How do you assess everything now, Dave Scott, after this high vibration week?
Well, there's a couple things, Walter, that we need to make sure that we actually take into point here. Number one, there was a company, a media company that uses drones. They said they had been doing some testing at night, but more so, I do believe, and I'm actually in a discussion as we speak with on Spaced Out Radio on the weekend show, that actually is talking about the fact that there have been reports from Fox News and News Nation that insiders claim that this is military operation of testing
drones out. Now, they're not giving any specifics in regards to what is really going on. However, I do believe that this has everything to do with the fact that drone warfare is becoming an intricate part of the new culture of war that we see going on, especially of Ukraine and Russia. And I believe that because this is happening over sensitive installations, including the president-elect's golf course in New Jersey, that they want to make sure that their new radar systems, or maybe changes to the radar systems, are actually being able to track these objects coming in. Because if it was an adversary, we know one thing's for certain. They would not be carrying lights on them. They would have some sort of infrared camera on them where they could see objects at night. If this was Russia, China, there would not be lights on them. Now, there are some strange objects that we just can't figure out. Could they be alien? Could they be some sort of future military technology that we don't know? It could be both. But I highly suspect that this is U.S. government doing testing and not the aliens themselves.
Oh, it can't be the aliens with headlights, with high beams. And nor do I think it's time travel. I think it's just what you said. Yeah, people forget what's in northern New Jersey. Summit, New Jersey is in northern New Jersey. And what's there? The world's largest research laboratory. It used to be known as Bell Telephone Laboratories. And at Bell Telephone Laboratories, it's where it was heavily believed that crafts that landed, UFOs that landed, were taken there and to other laboratories to be retrofitted. Bell Labs has the largest soundproof room, the hottest furnace on Earth. It was the place where, quote, night vision was invented, laser beams were, quote, invented, the transistor was, quote, invented, or were they all repurposed?
Well, I mean, it could be all of it. I mean, look, going back to the 1990s, there was a gentleman named Ben Rich, who was the head of Lockheed Skunk Works at the time. And publicly, he stated that the United States government already has the technology to get E.T. home again. And they stated that the technology that we were seeing in the sky compared to what they were doing was a difference of 50 to 80 years. Now, that's going back 30 years ago. If we look at this technology now, my friend, I am hearing that we are anywhere between 100 and 200 years ahead of what the public is seeing with their own eyes. So when we see something strange in the sky, that is likely U.S. technology and not something from a foreign adversary or anything else. We also have to remember, Walter, if we're worried about Russia and China, they, over the last 15, 18 years, have just developed stealth aircraft. The United States military and government has been using stealth aircraft since the 1960s with the U-2 and the SR-71. We see it in today's jet fighters with the F-22 and F-35. What do they have that is that far ahead that they are not worried about Russia and China coming out with stealth fighters the last 15, 18 years?
What do they have?
We don't know.
We don't know.
We really do not know. Isn't it weird, though? Let me throw this caveat at you. Isn't it weird, though, that the F-117 Nighthawk, the original stealth fighter that was first seen in 1989, was retired from military service in 2008. Yet, over Tonopah Air Force Base in Nevada, on a weekly basis, you'll see flying the F-117 Nighthawk stealth fighters. Why? Well, the people who are doing the tests for these secret aircraft out at Area 51, they need daytime flight hours. So,
Why do they need daytime flight hours?
Because most of their flights are happening at night. So, in order to keep on their professional training, they have to get daytime hours as well. So, what do? They retrofit the cockpits to the cockpits that they are flying in. put it in an aircraft that people already know and recognize, and then they fly those craft around during the day, so that way they don't have to be seen in that future technology that they don't want the world knowing about yet.
Got it. Do you have other news for us, Mr. Scott?
It is all drones right now, my friend. Drones, drones, drones. I wish there was some UFO news to pass along, even Bigfoot news to pass along. But unfortunately, everything is just inundated with these drones right now because people are watching. And you know what? Good on the public. And, you know, good on people taking the time to look at the sky and see what is actually going on. Keep those videos coming, because the way we're going to solve this mystery isn't by legacy media. We're going to solve it by people just like you listening, getting out there and filming these strange, whatever they are, up in the sky and putting it on social media.
This is the great Dave Scott. How do I find you on YouTube?
We're always at Spaced Out Radio on YouTube, every major podcast network, and on every social media.
Dave Scott, enjoy your weather. What is your weather in Canada right now?
Oh, it was warm today. It got up to about 37 degrees Fahrenheit, 5 degrees Celsius. So we had some rain. It's washed out some of the snow. I'm hoping the snow comes back really quick.
Dave Scott, we look forward to having you join our statehood.
Well, you know what? Once dear leader is exiled by your current president, who I think is going to give a great push here the next little bit, Canada will survive just like we always do.
All right, that's Dave Scott, our expert on UFOs, Bigfoot, metaphysics. Always an honor to have Dave Scott on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Starting on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. Yep, thank you so much. For our first Florida Story, we're going to Fort Lauderdale, more specifically the Rustic Inn Crab House, where a man meets a few of his friends for a night out on the town, and they got some oysters, and one of the oysters is a bacteria. It doesn't make the oyster look any different, smell any different, taste any different. But the Rustic Inn Crab House served about 100 dozen oysters just that day. But this one had a bacteria in it that after the man got home, he died. Now, this is a super rare experience, or is it? Yes, the manager of the Rustic Inn Crab House, he said that's one in a billion shot. We've been open for 60 years and probably served a couple billion oysters, and we've never had anyone get sick like this guy did. One in a billion? Well, those are pretty good odds. I don't think it's that high. This is the second dude to die in the past month from a bad oyster just in Florida. Not trying to freak you out or anything, just Florida's got gators and pythons and monkeys and crazy homeless guys on bath salts and gangbangers and mass shooters, and even the food will kill you. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to go to the Tampa area, where a 34-year-old Florida man and his new bride are on their honeymoon. Isn't that sweet? They've come to Tampa. They've gotten a room downtown, having the time of their life, celebrating their new love together. And in the morning, the bride wakes up and her groom isn't there. Well, where is my new husband? Well, it turns out that after you went to sleep, Florida woman, your new husband decided that he was going to go over to the Hyatt to meet a prostitute. So if that's not bad enough, on top of it, it's not even a real prostitute. So when he shows up, he's placed in handcuffs, sent to jail. It's a local sex trafficking sting operation. And so that's why he's not there when you wake up. And if you're thinking, oh, how could this newlywed be so dumb as to go get a prostitute during his honeymoon? I would think it was rare, but there was 176 men arrested in this sting operation. I had no idea it was that popular. I guess guys in Florida just can't order whores fast enough. Other than that, though, how was your honeymoon? Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Part two of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Sterling every night, inspired by Europeans who think they know America.
I wake up at 8 a.m. to the sound of gunshots and violence. Then after that, I have breakfast, an 18-piece fried chicken bucket with a 2-liter bottle of Coke. And then at 9 a.m., I start my daily commute from Los Angeles, California to New York City. Along the way, I drive through intense poverty and homelessness.
Now, have you heard this? Have you heard this police commissioner in New York? This is a political appointee. This used to be a very distinguished and important job. Well, it still is. Always filled by hardcore, experienced cops like Bill Bratton and Kelly, Commissioner Kelly, whose son Jim Kelly. Is it Jim Kelly? Is on WABC every day. He's a terrific talk show host. He was a terrific television star. But those were real police commissioners. You didn't mess with them. Well, now they have a police commissioner whose last job was as the commissioner of what? What? The sanitation department. Listen to her do this press conference about this murder.
In Midtown Manhattan early this morning, 50-year-old Brian Thompson, the CEO of United Healthcare, was shot and killed in what appears, at this early stage of our investigation, to be a brazen, targeted attack. This does not appear to be a random act of violence. The victim was in New York City to speak at an investor conference. It appears the suspect was lying in wait for several minutes. And as the victim was walking to the conference hotel, the suspect approached from behind and fired several rounds, striking the victim at least once in the back and at least once in the right calf. Many people passed the suspect, but he appeared to wait for his intended target. The suspect fled, first on foot, then on an e-bike, and was last seen in Central Park on Center Drive early this morning. The victim was removed to Roosevelt Hospital, where he was pronounced. I want to be clear. At this time, every indication is that this was a premeditated, pre-planned, targeted attack. Millions of people will be enjoying the tree lighting tonight, among other holiday events, and the NYPD will be out there with them, keeping them safe.
Really? Does she sound like she's going to keep you safe? Does she sound like a scary cop? No, no, no. This isn't about a woman police commissioner. No problem. We had great women police commissioners around the country, in Philadelphia, other cities. No fooling around. Didn't they have one in Atlanta? Yeah, around the country. That's not the issue. This one does not sound in charge. If you're a paramilitary organization, like the New York City Police, Chicago Police, Sacramento Police, Portland, Maine Police, if you're a paramilitary organization, what do you want? You want someone who's in charge. Because if no one's in charge, and if random members of the police department can go on their own direction, give orders, not give orders, talk to the press, not talk to the press, whatever it is, it doesn't work. I don't believe for one second that they don't know who the suspect is who murdered the CEO of United Healthcare. Yeah, I have United Healthcare. I have the same feelings about them as you do. That does not justify murder. That's the obvious answer. It doesn't justify murder. It's horrible. But the whole thing looks screwy, doesn't it? The person who was doing the shooting, according to Vic Ferrari, our in-house New York City retired police detective, he said he knew when he was coming out. He knew where he was going to be. This was a cool, calm, and collected shooter. An act of rage, an act of passion. The shooters almost inevitably run. This guy didn't run. He was cool as could be, just walked away. But we haven't seen him. We did not see him at the shooting. We've only seen photos of a guy who was in a Starbucks at a hostel, flirted with a person behind the counter at the hostel. Mysteriously, you could see his eyes in a taxi cab. They knew he went into a Port Authority station way up in Harlem and disappeared. But we don't know if it's the same guy who did the shooting. They may have been working together. Maybe paid the guy, hey, listen, go to the hostel, carry this backpack, wear this jacket, go to the bus, here's $100. Guy might have needed $100. By the way, seems like a very good looking guy. Did you see the eyes and the eyebrows? That seemed like a very good looking guy. And then did things that no professional shooter would do, like rented a city bike, took a taxi cab. All of these things involve receipts, photographs, cameras, things that a real shooter wouldn't do. Therefore, maybe that wasn't the real shooter who we're seeing. Maybe that's a decoy. And the real shooter paid somebody $100 to go to the bus, take a cab, go to Starbucks. Doesn't seem like things the shooter would do. I think the shooter shot and disappeared. And this other guy wearing an identical jacket and backpack makes the rounds, has some coffee, calls a friend, dials a friend for an answer. Because I think it's very weird that they have all these photographs, all these pictures of the person, and haven't announced a suspect and didn't get on the bus and follow them. Why didn't they get on the bus support authority and follow them? None of that makes sense. These are New York City cops. These are the best cops. But then when I hear their new police commissioner sounding like a sofa, I have a lot of problems. I have a lot of problems anyway. My name's Walter M. Sterling. And I have an email. I answer every email. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I suffered today. I went to a Catholic service of Christmas songs. And it was all non-hits. When you're stuck for an hour and a half in a church to listen to Christmas music, wonderful thing to do, very spiritual. I'm a very spiritual man. You know I am because I have flat feet. Anybody who has flat feet talks to God all day. Not in the kindest of words. But I had to listen to a non-hit Christmas celebration. That's exhausting. That's exhausting. And did you hear how much Dorothy's Ruby Slippers sold for? I'll tell you in seconds.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Ashley Benson.
The last time I lied, I had plans and I canceled them. And I just said I was very sick and I wasn't, but I was also, you know, that happened.
Cop to you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling every damn night. Oy, 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 oy.
Now I feel that you have embarrassed yourself at some point in your life spending money for show business memorabilia. Maybe you bought a first run Rolling Stones poster, or a souvenir ticket from a Beatles concert, or even weirder, did I get that right? The Kennedy Center honors tonight went to the Grateful Dead. We're celebrating heavy drug use. Is that right? Heavy drug use of all the bands in the world, the Association, Dionne Warwick, that deserve Kennedy Center honors. We gave one to the Grateful Dead. Let me get this right. Yes? Are you kidding me? There's no freak like a dead freak, man. Therefore, I bet you have wasted money from time to time on souvenirs from show business. Today, one of the pairs of Dorothy's Ruby Slippers from The Wizard of Oz, one pair, there were at least five. They had to have multiple pairs because they wore out. This wasn't made out of actual rubies, duh. It's made out of plastic and cardboard. And she had to run around and dance on it. There are four remaining that they know of. $32 million. It was speculated that it might go for $1.5 million at auction. It finally gets to auction today. Two idiots on the telephone were battling each other for the ruby slippers. $32 million. This was a pair that had been in the Judy Garland Museum in a glass case behind a glass door. About 5 years ago, somebody smashed the door, smashed the case, ran off with them, went to a fence. You know, a guy went to a guy, and the guy goes, well, these aren't real rubies. There's just plastic. Oh, just plastic. They had no intrinsic value. The ruby slippers had no value other than the magic value, the magical value. And Gwenda the good witch, wasn't she really the bad witch? Because at the end of the movie, what did she say to poor Judy, who'd been through hell and back? Had to have diet pills, was running around with a guy in aluminum paint, killed himself, died from the aluminum paint. What did she say to Dorothy? She said, all you had to do was tap your slippers three times and say, I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go home. And then she would go, wait. She had to go through 2.5 hours of hell in Oz with weirdos, with inappropriate munchkins, a guy in aluminum paint, another one who caught on fire every time he got near a hot light bulb. And all she had to do was click her heels three times, and she would have gone home. Why didn't Gwendolyn the Good Witch say that right away? Why didn't she come up to him right away? Instead, she tricked Dorothy into killing her evil sister, the Wicked Witch of the West. And I don't get this Wicked movie. We know the end. What do you mean there's going to be another 3 hours? Why is there going to be another 3 hours? Nobody seemed to like the first 3 hours. We're going to do another 3 hours. You and I were born knowing the end to The Wizard of Oz. It has been part of our culture. We don't need to see another 3 hours. But some idiot paid $32 million for the ruby slippers. Do you know what kind of a penthouse you could get in a real city for $32 million? You might even have trouble spending $32 million for a real penthouse in Manhattan. You might have trouble finding that penthouse. There might be three. And you wouldn't want to live in that building. It moves with the wind. It's very scary. $33 million. $32 million for the ruby slippers. How are they delivered, by the way? Is it an Uber driver who delivers it? I wasted money for a celebrity souvenir. I'm not proud, but I am going to talk about it. You ready? At the height of her breasts and success, like all Americans, I had a crush on Jennifer Love Hewitt. For some reason, at the same time, simultaneously, it seems every woman I ever met hated Jennifer Love Hewitt at the time. They like her now, but at the time, at the height of her breasts, when she was 22, they hated her. And I'd say to women, why do you hate Jennifer Love Hewitt? She's done nothing to you. And they could never articulate it. No woman could ever say, this is why I hated Jennifer Love Hewitt. And every guy is smiling right now. You, misfit, you're smiling because you know I'm right. The women you knew couldn't stand her, and they couldn't say why. On eBay, I saw an autographed pillow by Jennifer Love Hewitt. She autographed it herself. Jennifer autographed it for me. But I noticed that I kept competing for the price of this pillow with one other person. At first there were 10, then 3, then 2, then 1. One other person competed with me for this pillow. And it got so ugly, he showed up at my office and demanded that I give it to him. Sterling, every damn night.
Well, I'm J.J. Wilson with a special edition of Drive Through Brew. Now, not everyone who stops at the Drive Through Brew buys beer, wine, or candy. Let's listen as young Jake attempts to guide a lost and, well, not too bright, motorist.
Can I help you, sir?
Yeah, I'm confused, darn it. Could you tell me how to get to Route 22?
Okay. Go east on this road and turn left at the third light, then go about...
East. Would that be this way or that away?
No, that way is west. You want to go towards the gas station.
Gas station?
Yeah, it's right there. See the big sign?
Oh, yeah. So, west for three blocks, then right at the light.
No, east until you get to the third light, and then left.
Left, left, left. That's right. And how many blocks was it?
Excuse me one second. Mr. Manager, this guy's dumber than a Gilligan's Island rerun. Could you take over? He needs directions.
Sure. Where are you trying to go, sir?
Well, I was trying to get to my bank, but maybe I could go someplace less complicated.
I see. Well, hey, there's a McDonald's directly across the street. Would you like to go there?
Well, sure. How do I get there?
Hey, is there anybody out there who could walk this guy across the street? Meanwhile, listen next time when the manager says...
By the way, mister, what do you do for a living?
Oh, me? I'm a retired airline pilot. Did it for just one morning, but for some reason, they just let me go.
That's next time on Drive Thru Brew. Word Car speaking.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by pilot error.
Keep us out over the lake south of the city for now at 3,000 feet. But I'm not sure we're going to maintain 3,000 very easy.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late-night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Conquering the Skies. At their destination, Ash groped around for the doorknob and nudged the door open with his hip. It closed behind them, and he set her down on the floor and spun her around by the waist to face him. Dim wall sconces around the perimeter of the room cast him in a warm glow, highlighting the tender affection in his eyes. "If you'll indulge me in a rare, serious moment," he said, "you've made me the luckiest man in the universe today. No matter what happens from here on out, there's nothing the two of us can't handle together." Geneva caressed the side of his face. This was one of the, if not the, most amazing day of my life. And I know even better ones lay ahead of us. He inched forward, pressing his body alongside hers. Bracing her palms on his sturdy chest, she tilted her face upward in anticipation of his kiss. Before their lips made contact, however, someone knocked on the door. "It's unlocked," Ash called. Marcus appeared in the doorway, toting a small wheeled suitcase. The faint light from the hall silhouetted his slender frame as he watched them from several feet away. Despite the shadows, Geneva could recognize every familiar detail down to the hunger in his stare. And she drew in a sharp breath as she realized how much she wanted him. How much she wanted both of them. "I didn't mean to intrude," he said, interrupting her thoughts. "I figured you'd assume I'd be here shortly." "You're not intruding." She extended her hand toward him, beckoning him inside. "We got here just a moment ago. I wouldn't have blamed you if you'd gotten started without me." He set down his luggage beside a wooden dresser and joined them in the center of the room. "As it's your special day, we can celebrate any way you'd like tonight." Without leaving Ash's embrace, she half turned toward Marcus, tugging at the collar of his button-down shirt and using it to pull him closer. Her other hand remained on Ash's chest, above his heart. Glancing back and forth between them, she burst out in a fit of giggles. "What's so funny?" Marcus asked. She let her hand skim down his side until it rested at his waist. All this time, and I still can't figure out how to decide which one of you to kiss. He joined in her laughter. A dilemma with which I am quite familiar. Ash's hand also drifted lower, and he gave her hip a mischievous squeeze. I'm with Marcus on this one. You're in charge tonight. Me? She scoffed. The one who's infamous for her inability to make decisions? It's all worked out for the best so far, don't you think? Marcus steered her back toward her husband. Why don't you continue what you were doing before I arrived? I'll figure it out. Geneva allowed Ash to guide her lips to his. Their tongues tangled together, engaging in sweet spirals and probing explorations. As they resumed their prior kiss, another set of lips floated across her bare shoulder. Marcus swept her hair to one side from behind and continued along his path to the side of her neck. While Ash held her in place with one gentle palm cradling each side of her face, Marcus's hands glided down her body, coming to rest at the swell of her hips. They didn't linger for long, though, as they slipped around to her stomach. While he continued to pepper faint kisses along her skin, his hands rose to cup her chest, skimming over the silky fabric of her dress. His strong fingers sank into her flesh. A whimper strained in her throat, but Ash refused to relent, preventing her from speaking. Marcus continued to fondle and knead, and his teeth grazed the sensitive spot at the juncture between her neck and shoulder. She jolted, and he let out a low chuckle near her ear. Though her options for movement were limited, she rolled her hips backward, lengthening the connection between them. She longed to reach for him, to tear his pants away and reacquaint herself with every detail of him. But the two men kept her trapped between them. He abandoned her heaving chest, and she grumbled at the loss of contact, though the sound was stifled by Ash's fervent kiss. Marcus's fingers found the top of the zipper at the back of her dress and tugged at it. The deliberate scratch as he dragged the zipper down inch by painstaking inch echoed in her ears, and she shuddered at his feathery touch as he pushed the straps down her arms. Oh, unfortunately, I think I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Conquering the Skies, which is available at Amazon on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling every damn night.